Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. Once again, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year, it really is, that we take our freedom back. Because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And one of the actions that I've been mentioning all year is from Jeremiah 6:16. Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Ask where the good way is. And walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. A lot of people feeling anxious. A lot of people feeling anxious with what's happening around the world. A lot of people feeling anxious with what's happening here at home. And there is a lot going on. There is a lot going on. There's this sense something is like right on the edge right now. And actually the Chinese acknowledge it. I'll bring that up here in a second. But if you love America, you love the Constitution, you love freedom, then we can't leave anything on the table. We have to do everything we can to try to salvage what's left. And really, I think we have to make sure we focus on God as part of that. There are a lot of people who think we have all these solutions and legislative solutions, et cetera, et cetera. Look, the bureaucracy is so large right now. It's going to be almost impossible for one man, let alone a team of dedicated men, to dismantle it. It's going to take all of us as we the people to be the government of this country again. And I was reading an article about how dire the situation is, especially this coming election, how dire it is for the direction of the nation. But I always fall back on this, that God knows what he's doing. He knew we would be here before the beginning of time. And he knows what we need. We need him, obviously, but he knows what we need. And he will provide for us even in times of trouble. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy. But the fact of the matter is that we, to a great extent, have given up the playing field. We've given up the battlefield. We think that it's going to be more pieces of legislation. We think it's going to be more think tanks. We think it's going to be more clever ideas. When really it's comes down to this, and I think it's this simple. If we want to be free, if we want to know the freedom of our founding fathers, we're going to have to fight for it, and we're going to have to do it where we are. That means in our own homes, in our businesses, we're going to have to do it where we are. You know, they sacrificed quite a bit for freedom. And some things we don't even do, and it's not even really a sacrifice. I mean, we get ballots mailed to our houses. Obviously, I would like to see a return to poll voting, but we have ballots mailed to our houses. There is no excuse to vote. RestoreAmerica.org gives the following statistic that 58 million evangelical Christians are eligible to vote. That's not all Christians. That's evangelical Christians only. Largest voting bloc in America is Christians. And of that 58 million, only 33 million voted in the elections of 2004 and 2008, and only 30 million voted in 2012, and only 22 million voted in the 2010 elections. It's actually headed in the wrong direction. The largest voting bloc in America is Christians. The largest voting bloc in America that is not registered to vote is Christians. The largest voting bloc in America that is registered to vote but that doesn't vote is Christians. Some races we lost in the state house here in Washington State last cycle by 200 votes. Folks, that is the size of a small church that we lost. But it's not just voting. I think we then stop there. All we got to do is vote in the right people. No, we don't. Just have to vote in the right people. We have to hold people accountable. We have to become government of the people again. When you see people, you vote in 2010, we vote all these people in. It's going to be a great resurgence. And then nothing happens. We're allowing nothing to happen. We need to force our representatives. Show up in large numbers and force them to take up issues. Force them to do the right thing if they're wavering. That doesn't mean you're mean or you're rude. It means that you back up the good ones. And the ones that are wavering, spend the time to educate them to do the right thing. I think we stop there, but it's not gonna be one man being elected president either. Albeit he is a far better option than Hillary Clinton. And he's good on the big issues, trade, immigration, war, good on those issues. But it's not going to take one guy. It's going to take all of us. I think we think that one person gets elected and then we go to sleep again. It is going to take all of us. We can't just stop at the ballot box. We can't. We have to be involved at the local level and at the state level. At the local level particularly, there is so much power in the county commissioners, the county sheriff, city councils. They have such an impact on your lives. Everything from fees to all these things. And people say, well, Matt, there's all these regulations and cities have to follow those regulations. Fine, they have to follow them, but they don't have to charge the fees. There's all kinds of flexibility in there where you can actually make something of no effect by actually reducing enforcement practically. And that's how you get around these bureaucracies that are strangling to death America. And I'm tired of people saying we have to settle this lawsuit. We have to. We're afraid of the laws. Look, when are we going to fight? When? I hear excuses all the time. When are we going to fight? When are we going to stand up and say, no, not in my neighborhood, not in my town, not in my state, not in my county? When are we going to do that? You know, a lot of it is just buying time, it seems like. We have to be so involved at the local level, redouble our efforts. And I tell you what, going into this fall, I would urge everybody listening to this radio program, please, things are so turbulent right now. If you are not preparing, if you are not storing up food, if you're not storing up water, if you're not storing up, oh, there it is, guns and ammunition, medical supplies, communication equipment, if you're not doing that and something happens and you're not ready for it, how can you love your neighbor through that and how can you actually help restore a God-honoring constitutional republic? We need to be ready for all eventualities. And it used to be back in the 30s, it was nothing. It was nothing for people to store food up after that Great Depression. My grandmother had a huge pantry. Walk in there, it was stocked to the gills because she never wanted to go hungry again. And she darn well wanted to make sure that her family didn't go hungry and her friends and even some of her neighbors. Are we taking that mentality? I'm taking longer on this than I wanted to, but my goodness, people say, well, nobody ever told me. I am telling you right now, as an elected official, but also, in probably more importantly, as a Christian brother in the Lord, all the information that I get, I put out maybe 5% of it. It's so overwhelming. But all of that information points in one very dramatic direction. Be prepared. Be ready. It takes all the fear out of everything. And guess what? At that moment in time when somebody comes up to you and asks, hey, I need help with something, you can say, Jesus Christ gave that to you. And what a great opportunity to witness to. We have to take this stuff seriously. We have to show up. We have to take ownership of this at the local level. We just have to. Which brings us to the international front and your daily intelligence briefing. The Chinese at the end of the G20 conference, and apparently Obama was the subject of a lot of scorn and ridicule from around the world. I mean, it's interesting. There's actually CNN put it. Obama suffers the slings and arrows of a restless world. Restive, excuse me, world. CNN. So the Chinese say, quote, as they're leaving, we live in turbulent times, end quote. That's how the Chinese leave the G20 meeting. A little ominous. Also on the international front, the solutions, once again, own it locally, just like the Polish militias are doing, just like the Czech Republic is now advocating its citizens do. It's not something scary. It's not something stupid. You just store up food and water. And you know what? Worst case scenario, let's say nothing happens. Nothing ever happens. And that's great. Nothing ever happens. 5-10 years from now, you can donate to a food bank and help feed people too. Right? So what is the downside? There isn't one. Which brings us to the national front and a little bit of a somber note. Phyllis Schlafly, really an icon. I mean, just always on the right sides of issues, helped turn the Republican Party to the right, passed away at age 92. And so, you know, say a prayer for her family and her friends as well. She didn't live to see the election, which is kind of interesting to me, a little ominous, actually. Very interesting to me. Also on the national front, I met with somebody today who works in the security / intelligence field. And we talked quite a bit about what's going on in the country, and especially about the infiltration of ISIS, the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's interesting, I think people completely miss this issue. But it is now like the new norm that there are terrorist attacks inside the United States of America on a fairly regular basis. I'm talking like once every 30 days, a plot is either foiled or is brought to consummation. And there was a knife jihad attack actually in Roanoke, Virginia. Never made the news. Never made the news. And it's happening all over Europe too, these knife jihads. And ISIS and Al-Qaeda put out that that's what they wanted their followers to start doing. And so they started doing it. And now we say it's not terrorism. We say it's not happening. And here's the interesting thing. We have a lot of refugees that are coming from the Middle East. Okay. And it's interesting, the standards are so dramatically different between some populations. Some populations receive full vetting, especially the ones that worked for the U.S. military that are coming back over here, fleeing those countries, came back to the United States because they helped military installations over there in the Middle East. Okay, they're being thoroughly vetted. I confirmed this, actually. Thoroughly vetted. Others are not. None at all. But it's interesting to me that some of those people, that the ones especially that are being thoroughly vetted, they come here and they want to live in a good country. They want to provide for their families. They don't like ISIS. And yet, that community recognizes the threat. But the Obama administration doesn't. Unbelievable. And even more unreal, some of our one in particular of our leaders locally, not only intentionally doesn't recognize the threat, but meets with the people who belong to the organizations that are helping to foment the threat. And, it's unreal to me that when you have the Holy Land Foundation trial and a federal district court judge find as a matter of fact and law that the North American Islamic Trust and the Council of American Islamic Relations are both members of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that threat is well recognized, that we just don't recognize it locally? What does it take? Interesting, too, that, like, for example, in Orlando, the mosque that the shooter there went to, it's like they pretend that nobody knew this guy. The mosque is a tiny mosque, physically. Like, you walk in, it's like a kind of a large room. That's it. And they're trying to claim that they didn't know. I mean, folks, we know that this is happening. There is no such thing as a lone wolf attack. That is propaganda. And it's continuing to happen now all over the country. These knife jihads probably gonna escalate there too. Also on the national front, the election hack of Illinois and Arizona. And the solution, of course, is more government, this in particular being the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, which was hacked itself dramatically, wants to take over the elections, and everybody is starting to say through intelligence channels that there is a very high probability that the election is literally going to be hacked. So why are we creating this instability ahead of time by even mentioning it? That's an interesting point. But secondly, we've known for a long time that the computerized voting systems and even the counters, and this is key, even the counting machines can be hacked. So if you have a paper ballot, the electronic counting machines can be hacked too. And it looks like many people are trying to pin this whole thing on the Russians, and that they probably will try to influence the election. All I can say is this. We need to go back to poll voting, number one, and number two, we don't need more government. We need more decentralization. And we need to do what Iraq did when it held its first elections after the fall of Saddam Hussein. They went to the polls and they get a little purple finger. My goodness, why couldn't we do that here? Also on the national front, the debt now is $19.5 trillion. Probably can't even fathom what that even means. $19.5 trillion. Dollars is our national debt. $19.5 trillion. That we can't continue down this road. We just cannot continue down this road. Also on the national front, and also kind of a little bit on the international front, the fourth largest shipping container company in the world filed bankruptcy. Their assets are frozen. Ships are frozen at the port. Can't be unloaded. Hanjin. Almost no mention in the mainstream media. But the fact of the matter is the Baltic Dry Index continued to go up and down. It went way, way down to almost 300. And then it kind of bounced up a little bit, but still portends some pretty bad things, that shipping is so low that it requires a company like Hanjin, the seventh largest, to go out of business. That is a dramatic event that was not reported. So we're going to make sure we report it on Patriot Radio. Also on the national front, Citibank. So you have some interesting things that are happening, okay? Prior to the crisis in 2008, there was a gobbling up of derivatives, okay? All right, so what we have happening now is that Deutsche Bank is literally dumping bucket loads of credit derivatives. And Citigroup Incorporated is buying them up. So you have exactly what happened in 2008, where you had a dump of derivatives and then somebody gobbling them all up at one time prior to that crash. And it's happening again right now. There's actually a couple articles on it, but the Daily Bell has probably the best one, in my opinion. Reliving what was called, there's a movie actually about this called The Big Short, betting in that direction. Well, moving on to the last thing on the national front, Chris Ann Hall, a lot of you probably wondering what happened. Well, she's fine after the hurricane passed over her house, and they're cleaning up down there, but everything is fine. Got some great folks helping her out down there in Florida, so just want to make sure I followed up on that. All right, on the regional front, Joe Robertson, talking about the situation in Montana, has now been moved out of state. His wife is distraught about this. Please pray for their family. But this is the kind of thing that happens. They're intentionally moving him out of state so they can't have any family nearby. Unreal. That whole thing has been unreal. But that just adds more to it. Also on the regional front, the McCurvin Ranch up in Northeast Washington. Some of you had heard about this, but the Seattle Times essentially published an article that said, based on some very flawed research, which I will highlight here in a moment. Seattle Times published an article that essentially said that the cattle ranchers up there that are losing cattle, and when I say losing cattle, losing dozens, literally over 100 cattle. And by the way, anytime a wolf attack happens in a herd, you will have the rest of the remaining cows drop their birth rate down dramatically. And when I say dramatically, more than half. Here's the interesting part about this. This Seattle Times article resulted, okay, in death threats. Why would it result in death threats? Well, because the McCurvin Ranch, in the Seattle Times article, they accuse the McCurvins of intentionally putting their cattle into a known wolf area so they would be killed. In other words, they're trying to say that the McCurvins actually intentionally put their cattle in an area where there was wolves so that the wolves would kill them. That is one of the most outrageous things I have ever heard in this entire thing. But what it resulted in was direct threats to the family. I mean, they were receiving so many death threats they had to shut their phone off. Death threat upon death threat from the so-called peaceful left out of Seattle. Well, then the Seattle Times, with its tail between its legs, had to admit that that claim was untrue. That this researcher's statements about wolves interacting with livestock that stirred up all this controversy was inappropriate and inaccurate, and that was from Washington State University throwing its own researcher under the bus. So now WSU's walking away from it. Well, here's the whole point. These wolves are killing dozens and dozens of cattle, dozens and dozens of sheep as well, and everybody's trying to turn a blind eye to it and say these wolf attacks are not occurring at all. You don't know it's a wolf, but it's been happening literally for a long time now. And now the left tries to pull this and gets exposed for the false narrative that was put out there that this somehow was intentional. What they actually were able to prove, the McCurvins, that is that they actually had to put their cattle in the area that was alleged based on their range management plan. So they had to put the cattle over there. So we're going to be posting more about this on Facebook. But this situation got really heated there for a bit. And we just need to keep our eyes on this because this battle is not over and this wolf mismanagement is not over either. Also on the regional front, University of Washington admitting in a scientific study that minimum wage increases destroy jobs. And every small businessman out there went, duh. Indeed. Also on the regional front, the 51st state naming contest, the name that won by a large margin of votes is Liberty. Unofficially, people wanted the capital to be Opportunity, which is really curious because the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, used to be named opportunity. So kind of an interesting thing there. Maybe something to think about for us folks in Spokane Valley. Maybe changing the name. I don't know. Interesting. But I do want to say, if you want to get in an idea for a flag for the 51st State of Liberty, please make sure to post it on Facebook at Patriot Radio US and get some ideas from your friends and family. And we're going to actually incorporate this into the legislation that will be dropped. So please, if you get a chance, weigh in with your ideas on that. Be kind of fun. Also, on the local front, Sean Vestal, again, my goodness. I don't know if this is ever going to go away for Sean Vestal. But Sean Vestal tried to come back after the article exposing his links to PJALS, the Communist Party USA, and the Council of American Islamic Relations. Tried to come back and say that the article was not accurate because he never has given them money. And yet, on the PJALS annual fundraising dinner, auction, banquet, he's listed as an item donor. And that item happened to be a lunch with Sean Vestal. Now, under tax law, as a total side note, you actually have to assign a monetary value to a gift like that for tax purposes, but I digress. Yes, Sean Vestal is connected. Yes, he donated to them. And yes, they invited a leader in the Communist Party USA, Judith LeBlanc, along with the Council of American Islamic Relations, to their 2015 and 16 annual conferences, respectively. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for the show. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to donate and keep us on the air, you can go to VoteShea.com. Well, it's my pleasure actually to talk about some of these land use management issues from somebody that is a subject matter expert. Been involved in this fight for a very, very long time. My good friend, Renee Holiday, how are you doing? Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Well, good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Well, I saw that you changed. Now, you used to be the Stevens County chapter of the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights, but you've changed your name now.
Right. Yeah, we're now the Stevens County Property Rights Group. We've broke off from CAPR for a few different reasons, primarily just because it allows us a little bit more opportunity to speak publicly without maybe incriminating another organization. So that helps.
Well, this is going to be a great opportunity for you to speak publicly, I guess,
right?
And a little more freely. Well, let's talk about the wolves first. This is kind of crazy. This has been going on up there for a long time. The ridiculous management requirements for land up there, I mean, the stubble heights and all this ridiculous stuff. If you could kind of go through and paint a picture for everybody listening to the show today about what exactly is going on the ground.
Well, clearly we had a sudden influx of wolves that didn't exist before, that started a couple years ago. And there was documentation and video shown that the wolves were actually brought across the Canadian border. And, I mean, we didn't have a wolf problem prior to that happening, and then all of a sudden it was an explosive issue, and there is all of a sudden all these wolf packs. And so that's pretty much where it started. And, you know, that in it of itself backs up all of Agenda 21 and their desire to, you know, bring back in the large predators into areas that they wanted to rewild. And so they already did that clearly with that particular, you know, action right there. And they're trying to do the same thing now with grizzly bears. So that's where it started. And obviously when you bring in a bunch of wolves, you know, they're going to reproduce quickly. And so now we have them even as far as just last week there was one spotted right in Colville. And so, you know, they spread pretty quickly. And as a large predator, they are definitely formidable. So.
Well, I want to let's talk a little bit about the so-called forest management and range management that's been going on up there. It seems from my perspective, but I'm just a little old, you know, guy from Spokane Valley, right? it kind of seems to me that, you know, there's a lot of not regulation, but intentional shutting down of all the land that's going on up there. If you could kind of describe a little bit about the different regulations that are going on, some that you've actually personally experienced.
I actually personally don't have a lot of experience with that because I'm not, I don't have to participate in any of the land leases through the Forest Service or anything like that. But the local cattlemen have described how the land that they're able to lease for the summer, which is not cheap, by the way. I mean, a lot of them have described that they've spent upwards of $10,000 to $15,000 to pay for that lease. And so what they've described is the kind of regulation that makes it impossible to comply, where they want, you know, like you had mentioned, stubble height, where those kind of regulations in those areas say, well, you have to keep the stubble height of the grass that's being grazed to no lower than 6 inches, 6 to 8 inches, and especially around waterways, otherwise they'll pull all the cattle out of there and then not let them come back either. So that's prohibitive, and, you know, when that's your mainstream business and your livelihood, and suddenly you can't even possibly meet those regulations, I mean, it stops you almost immediately. So,
well, it's like cows walk around with rulers too, right?
Right. Right. And, you know, plus, they're in mountainous areas, and so you can't watch every cow, every little last step they're taking, you know, all throughout these mountains. You know, you can watch them generally, you know. And so, I mean, gosh, and, you know, it's just not even possible to keep up with those regulations, and they're clearly designed that way, so.
Yeah, indeed they are, and it's all part of Agenda 21, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But now enforcement actions are the other thing that agencies do, and they do it in rural America. A lot of times it's under the radar, it doesn't make the media. But there is a tremendous amount of what I would call kind of vindictive enforcement, where it's not the idea that we're working with people, you know, to conserve things. We just actually want to shut the land down or close roads down or penalize property owners or find something that's wrong. What is your experience up there, and what stories have you heard up in Northeast Washington?
Well, we're becoming more and more familiar with road closures and things where, you know, you've been able to do things before, but, you know, as they tighten the noose, everything just incrementally is being restricted to the point where, you know, it, like you're saying, it just closes everything down. And so what we're looking at is, like people that tend to go out into national forest areas, the restrictions are becoming greater to where you can now only drive your car in, I think 1 mile, one mile, maybe 2 miles at this point. And then anything from there on out has to be by foot or by horse or by bicycle, no motorized. And so a lot of people are saying, wow, well, you know, if you started at 1 mile and it goes back 10, 12, 15 miles, you know, who really is even going to be that serious to go back that far? And so the majority of the people don't go much farther than that. So while they haven't completely restricted it, they might as well have, because that's just not the nature of people to go take an 18-mile hike, you know. So,
no,
anyway.
not typically, unless you're, I don't know, training for something in the military, I guess.
That's right.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that are happening locally. There's this implementation of voluntary stewardship plans, and this idea that management can be voluntarily taken up, and I'm giving the broad overview, at the local level. And that there, you know, that if you do that, then a lot of these enforcement actions and all these things that agencies are doing right now will kind of be put on the back burner as a gentleman's agreement, put on the back burner, and they won't be doing those enforcement actions if you follow the voluntary stewardship model. So if you could, for the listeners, describe what voluntary stewardship programs are and kind of what your thoughts are you know, in the long term, that they could actually be detrimental.
Right. And as with most things that are, you know, going along with regulations and implementing things like fines for noncompliance, you run into an awful lot of deception and an awful lot of upfront, just flat out lying, because it's easier to get their foot in the door if they will initially tell you lies to make it sound better. And unfortunately, that's what we are running into with this voluntary stewardship program. And I mean, I think even just the name of it kind of describes their level of deception, because it's already a law, it's already written into law and passed, and yet it's called voluntary. And so that has been, you know, that was the first question we all asked, was how is this both a law and voluntary? and they can't seem to answer that question with a square answer that makes any sense. And so, I mean, you yourself would, what would you consider to be the justification for calling something voluntary while it's also a law? I mean, how would you answer that, you know?
You can't. I mean, it's not, well, and all these programs never end up being voluntary anyway. I mean, it's always setting a framework that will later be mandatory.
Right, right, exactly. And so, you know, we've been through, 8 months worth of voluntary stewardship program meetings so far. And, you know, we're running into each meeting where, like the first meeting, they described to all the local people that, well, if you participate in this, you know, you can get out at any time, and all the people here locally are going to be the ones making all the decisions as to what happens and what they're going to allow. And basically going to be in charge of the whole thing. And that was what we were told in the first meeting. And so everybody kind of went, well, okay, we'll see about that. And so by the next meeting, that was already null and void. The commissioners and the conservation district people had already fully taken over in the second meeting and had the full outline for how everything was going to be down to the last minute and what they were going to talk about and what they were going to allow to be said and stuff. And so, you know, this is kind of how it starts in. So, you know, with the first lie, and even reading the beginning of the law in 36.70A.700, it says that this law was established in the report submitted by the William D. Ruckelshaus Center to the legislature. And I don't know if the listeners are aware of who that is and exactly, you know, how far that scope reaches, but William D. Ruckelshaus is quite an enormous figure in, you know, in the past 40 years of this country, where he was the first administrator of the EPA, and then he held, you know, various different appointees from then on, where he served as the director of the American Water Development with Maurice Strong, who, you know, most people already know Maurice Strong was the undersecretary of the United Nations. And so he served as the director for the American Water Development, and while he was on board there, they actually came up with and tried to pass the first water banking, you know, idea in Colorado in the San Luis Valley. And that failed miserably, and now we have water banking here starting up in Washington State. So I just wanted to point that out real quick and just describing Ruckelshaus a little bit. But he also went back to the EPA as the head of the EPA for another couple years after that. Then he served on the World Commission on Environment and Development for the United Nations. Then he was appointed by Clinton as U.S. Envoy for the implementation of the Pacific Salmon Treaty, and then appointed by Governor Gary Locke as chairman of the Salmon Recovery Funding Board. And then it goes on and on. He's got so many high-level appointments by either presidents or United Nations councils that it's just frightening. And this is the guy that supplied this VSP document to the Washington State Legislature. And so that right there raised a whole bunch of questions, you know, with us going, okay, well, so this is, you know, VSP is written into the Growth Management Act as more or less like Growth Management Act was part one and VSP is now part two as, you know, in succession. So it's being presented as an alternative to having to deal with GMA, and they're trying to say that, well, if you get into VSP, then you'll be protected from, you know, just how bad GMA actually was. When in actuality, what we're seeing is that it's ending up being worse. And so, you know, there's quite a bit that we've gotten into, and I've described, you know, to them that, well, I think I would actually rather look to GMA than VSP because what we've found so far in our research with this is that through VSP, the commissioners have to sign on to it for the entire county. And so it's not a matter of you know, the Department of Ecology having to go to each individual landowner and say, you know, we want you to comply with this, and then they have to actually do things in a legal manner where, you know, they might have to go to court to decide if that's even legal or not. Well, the Department of Ecology doesn't want to have to do that with each and every individual landowner. And so what this VSP does is gives them blanket right over entire counties so that they can say, well, we've already agreed to do this. And so, you know, it's like it more or less becomes worse than GMA because, you know, so it's like, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to be clear about it, where GMA forces them to go after each individual and VSP just gives them full blanket coverage for an entire county at a time. So.
Well, so the question comes up, you know, right now the system is, I would say, fairly well broken. And really, it's not about conservation. It's just literally about shutting down vast swaths of land in the West. And there was the argument made in the legislature, to many of us, actually, that this would be something that clearly was not perfect, but would be something that would buy time and prevent enforcement of regulations from, you know, various agencies. What is your take on that? Because ultimately, in the long term, everybody agreed this would not be a good idea. But in the short term, it might have a benefit. What is your, you know, what is your take on that?
Well, my take on that is that, I don't know, it's just a clever ruse as a way for them to get it going and get it in motion. Because they know once something is in motion, it's way harder to get it repealed and stopped than it is to, you know, just keep going with it. Like, you know, for instance, the comprehensive plan was established the same way, where everybody said, well, you know, we do have these choices, they're providing us these choices, and of course those choices are all within the framework of, you know, GMA, so there aren't any choices outside that that give you any rights. And so they've kind of done the same thing, and by using the excuse, it kind of just, you know, the excuse of, well, let's just do it for now, and if we decide it's really bad, we'll stop it later. Well, you know, the same thing could be said for GMA as well, where, you know, look at how bad it is, and nobody likes it, but now it's so thoroughly entrenched that, I mean, you look at it almost as an impossible thing to get rid of. And so, I don't know, their idea of saying that we can do this now and in the future we might get rid of it, or if it's really bad, do something about it, then who's going to have the authority to do it at that point? You know, I just can't foresee Washington State suddenly becoming a fully Republican-endorsed state, you know, where that kind of scenario would actually be possible, you know. And I don't know what your input on that would be, but I think it's kind of just a clever way to get your foot in the door and get people to say yes where they normally would just say no. And So that's the initial step. And also we've seen through their continual lying, you know, that they get you to agree to a lie. And then the next day, you know, the next time you meet, it's not that anymore. But now they've got another new lie for you to agree to.
And see, that's what bothers me. I've seen that happen over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I have. I'm sorry. Go continue.
Well, and so, you know, there's the whole thing of, well, we argued, it says that, well, you can get out of it if you want to. And when you read in the RCWs, it says you can get out of it if you will talk to all the other board members that have been, you know, elected from the commissioners, and if they agree that you getting out of it won't cause any adverse, you know, problems to the whole county, then they'll let you. And the problem is with that is all the people that have been elected are getting financial incentives to keep going. And so if they're in charge of the whole county being in compliance with everything the DOE wants, they're not going to let anybody out. They're going to say, well, if that guy gets out, then the next guy will want to get out. And if that guy, you know, it'll just cascade. And then their whole working plan to keep everything the way they want it to be, according to regulations, will just fall apart. And so so then when you read, okay, so say they don't want you to get out. Well, then right there in the law it says that they can go back to the agency and have the agency enforce local, you know, the local sheriff or whomever is in law enforcement to come and force you to do it. And so threatening, you know, fines or I don't know, possible arrest, that's kind of the bottom line with this whole VSP is it's the same thing that DOE has always said, well, do it or else we'll fine you and take everything you've got, you know, which is exactly what happened in my case on my property. So I asked them, I said, so what is the difference? What's the difference between DOE coming in and just running everything or this VSP coming in and having that as the same bottom line? And they said, well, you know, that was kind of there as a last resort type of a, you know, conclusion that we hopefully never have to use. And I said, well, that's funny because that's exactly what all the DOE agents say too, you know. So, but the problem, you know, also is that I think the individual stands a better chance fighting something on his own where there might be, you know, several thousand individuals fighting it on their own than to just have a blanket statement saying everybody has to do it. So.
Yeah, makes it easier on them to do these kinds of enforcements. Well, up there in Northeast Washington, what is now the Stevens County Property Rights Group taking on as issues, and what do you see kind of in the forefront? And also, how can people get involved and find out more information about you and your group?
Well, we actually haven't even had our first official meeting under our new name yet. and so we've got to get a website established, but we're still basically working on all the same things that we were under CAPR, and which is primarily right now we're focusing on VSP because we feel that's the most detrimental thing happening right now. That and the water banking issue that is now, you know, established as a tri-county water banking issue that's coming up. And let's see, beyond that, we're also working against like falsified wetland reports and trying to help people, you know, get out from underneath those false delineations and, you know, the takeover of their property through federal jurisdiction, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, the majority of our focus right now is against the VSP.
Wow. Well, if people, you know, want to do something in their own community, because, I mean, this is broadcast all over Eastern Washington, Northern Idaho, and Northeast Oregon, and they see some of this stuff starting in their county, what would be some steps that you would tell them to do up front to combat this stuff?
Well, like with VSP, well, the water banking is definitely all over Eastern Washington right now, and a lot of people don't even know it's underway, and the commissioners have already signed on to it and said it's a fantastic thing, but it's, again, it's a Ruckel's House idea. And like I was saying, that started with Maurice Strong in Colorado. In fact, in the same valley that I grew up in when I was a little kid. So that's even stranger. But so those are some of the issues, like the water banking. Anytime you hear about it, oh my gosh, make sure you get to the commissioners' meetings about it and put your input in. Make sure you stand up and clearly state that you're absolutely against it. Because this was all going on, and none of us had any idea. I mean, we had no knowledge of it whatsoever, because these meetings are advertised fairly quietly, and, I mean, really, it's hard to even keep up on a lot of it. And like with voluntary stewardship programs, they sound good, but, you can feel it. I mean, just reading through the documents, you know it, and you feel that it's wrong. Don't go along with it. Don't go along with it thinking that, oh, someday somebody will fix it somewhere else down the line, and it doesn't have to be me. It's got to be you. You've got to realize that you have to stand, and you have to say no, and you have to stick with that no for as long as it's going to take, because, their idea of just passing it down to the next generation and, you know, we'll just do it for now. We'll just do this terrible thing for now, and hopefully it'll be better in the future. It never works out that way, so...
Yeah, it never really seems to. So I presume you guys are taking members. So if somebody wants to become a member of your organization up in Stevens County that's listening to the show right now, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they go?
They can call 509-935-8377. And we can take their email and their phone number and call them back and let them know about meetings that we're going to be having and dates and times.
Perfect. And if you could shoot me a point of contact, I'll make sure to post it up on Patriot Radio as well so folks can get connected with you up there. What message do you have for the young people that are out there right now that are listening saying, why does anybody even care about this stuff? Why does anybody care? Don't you want a good environment? What's your message specifically directed to young people?
Well, to all the young people, I need to tell the young people, we need you so badly. I mean, we need your energy. We need your informed input. It's an education that you're going to have to really get into and understand, because, we're sorely short of people that are able to stand up and defend what is right and what we've been able to have for the past 225 years, thanks to our Constitution and our laws. And there are so few young people that understand anything about what's going on right now. And so I challenge the youth and the college, the college age students to really just start researching into Agenda 21. Look up all this stuff. They can read my book, The Perils of Sustainable Development. There's lots of publications out there, and if they would pay attention to different things like property rights groups and maybe even just attend a couple meetings where they can go and get some information, then they'll have a start, and they can learn from there. But it's almost a critical issue that the youth get involved.
I completely agree, because it's the next generation, and a lot of these kids, when I talk to them and I'll show them different websites and things, they're just blown away that they've been lied to most of their lives, and now they want to get involved. So I absolutely agree with you, and it'll provide energy in the movement as well. Well, Renee, thank you very much for joining me today. We'll have you back on again. I really appreciate all the hard work and everything you're putting into it, and keep up the fight up there in Stevens County.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right. Renee Holidays, Stevens County Property Rights Group, also the author of Perils of Sustainable Development and Somebody that has just been generally fighting for freedom for a long, long time and a subject matter expert on a lot of this stuff, and especially on Agenda 21. You know, I will relate a story to everybody that's listening out there. I was over in SeaTac, and I testified before the SeaTac City Council. And when I was done, a couple of reporters from The Stranger. Now, most of us don't know what The Stranger is, but it is the most liberal and, it, very candidly, a trashy publication in the entire state of Washington. Very vulgar, etc. Well, these two reporters decide they're going to try to ambush me outside as I'm going to my car. And I was with Glenn Morgan, actually, at that time. And they asked me, do you believe in Agenda 21? And my immediate response to them was, do you mean the 300-page, 30-chapter document entitled The UN Agenda for the 21st Century? Yes, I believe that's real. Here's the cool thing. They did not know what to say. They didn't know what to do. So you kind of look at them, don't you believe that? It's a policy that's been put out there, implemented locally. It's real. What's the argument? And when you use primary source documents like that, it really stops the left in their tracks. When you actually read some of this stuff, and even the voluntary stewardship plan, you know, some of us voted, I voted for it, because it was put forward to us that this was going to be delaying and buying time. And in some respects, it did, but in a lot of respects, there's some long-term implications that weren't readily available in the language that we actually read. So not only do you have to read stuff, but you actually got to step outside of it and find some contextual sources as well. And sometimes that's really difficult, especially if you don't know a lot about the subject. But that is how we can fight back at the local level. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.